The political divisions in America and Kansas seem deeper than ever. Republicans and Democrats are disdainful of one another. They can't seem to work together on anything. But one politician in Kansas thinks he has a solution. He says, like a couple going through a divorce, the two parties need a mediator. And that mediator should be neither a Republican or a Democrat. We talk with Greg Orman about why he wants to be the next governor of Kansas and why he's running as an independent. But first, we get an update on a new millennial caucus in Topeka and a briefing on Kansas's confusing, conflicting, and stricter than most marijuana laws. I'm Jim McLean, and this is Statehouse Blend, Kansas. And we have Statehouse Bureau Chief for Kansas Public Radio, Stephen Caranda, with us this week, as always, to talk about the week that was at the Kansas Statehouse. And Stephen, some of the folks who help us produce this podcast say that we're risking call your fatigue by talking about the new governor so much. But on the other hand, you really can't talk about what's going on at the Statehouse without talking about Jeff Collier. He was pretty active again this week, gave the re-State of the State speech, issued some executive orders. Brief us on all that.
I've been calling it State of the State 2.0. It wasn't officially a State of the State address because we had that last month with Governor Brownback, but it was effectively a State of the State address. The Supreme Court justices were there, House lawmakers, Senate lawmakers, and Collier laid out some of the things he's going to be doing. So he unveiled four executive orders on transparency measures. And some of them are pretty significant, including making open records requests under 100 pages free, creating a website to compile open meetings information, and requiring people in his administration to use state email addresses so they're not doing any state business on private email.
Now, why is that important? Because there was a situation a couple of years ago where state officials were emailing copies of the state budget, but using their private email servers so they can get around public records laws or something?
That's the concern, is that you want things on state email addresses so that they can be accessed if they need to be in the future.
Let's listen to a little bit of tape, a snippet from the re-State of the State address. Again, Governor Jeff Collier talking about the importance of transparency.
Kansas government must be more transparent. And in my travels around the state, I've talked to many Kansans who expressed their desire for more sunlight on government dealings.
Beyond transparency and some of the executive orders, he issued one also on sexual harassment and some new policies in the executive branch on that issue. But he also touched on the very controversial topic of abortion, didn't he?
He did. He was pretty critical of a court ruling that said there was a right to abortion in the Kansas Constitution.
A Kansas court issued a ruling which argues that the framers of the Kansas Constitution imagined abortion as a separate constitutional state right. This is violence against the very basic facts, and this cannot stand.
This is an issue that's now before the state Supreme Court. Like I said, this lower court ruled that there is a right to abortion in the Kansas Constitution. And he's kind of making this preemptive strike, saying that's a terrible idea. And so afterwards, I asked him, you know, that sounded to me like you were asking for a constitutional amendment on this. And he said he believes that's the most logical way to handle it. So now it looks like if the Supreme Court does agree with the lower court that there's a right to abortion in the state Constitution, we could have a big can of worms opened with a constitutional amendment fight in the legislature, which could turn into a big deal.
In addition to Governor Collier and his getting settled in the job, other things were going on around the Statehouse. And one of the things that I was intrigued by was this creation of what they call the Kansas Futures Caucus. Explain to me what that's all about.
Well, their goal basically is to tell young people, look, we're here to listen to you and we're interested in hearing about the issues that are important to you. One lawmaker I talked to about it, Stephanie Clayton, a Republican House member, she is one of the co-chairs of the group. Her argument was that younger people often feel disconnected or sometimes even disrespected by government officials.
Not everyone in government thinks that, you know, they're screwing around and eating avocado toast and living in their parents' basement. These are people who are trying to get by and trying to set their adult lives, and we need to listen to them.
So she told me right now they aren't introducing any legislation. What they're doing is they're putting out this message saying, young people, contact us and let us know what issues are important to you so we can start to address them.
So this is the millennial generation represented in the Kansas legislature, but there's this sense that that's a generation that's kind of turned off to politics, at least conventional politics, traditional politics, and these people then are going to lend an ear and be listening for the issues that might be important to this cohort and then bringing them into the legislative process. Is that the idea?
That's exactly right. And this is a group that is bipartisan. And if you looked at the meeting, there were lawmakers from across the ideological spectrum. So it looks like a group that's really open to various viewpoints and wants to get viewpoints from younger Kansas.
Kansas's marijuana laws could be among the things that millennials want to see changed. With so many different and sometimes conflicting laws, it can be hard to keep track of what's legal and what's not. So we're enlisting the Kansas News Service's Celia Yopis-Jepson to guide us through the, pun intended, weeds of the state's cannabis laws.
One thing I've learned in looking into cannabis is that no one can resist a good cannabis pun.
That's right, including me.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, it is a topic that does keep cropping up, another little pun there. And this year it seems to be, there are several issues on the cannabis front, and you're going to walk us through those?
So by my count, I'm looking at least three bills this year. Mm-hmm. We're talking about things like reducing criminal penalties related to this plant, and bills that look at opening the door, even if it's just a little bit, to growing hemp, which comes from the same mm-hmm. plant, or using CBD, which is an oil that some people believe has therapeutic effects that also comes from the same plant.
Yeah, and that's been an issue for a while because I remember interviewing the parents of a child who suffered this from this seizure disorder, and they were convinced that the CBD oil would be beneficial to him and actually moved to Colorado so that they could try it.
Yeah, it's legal in a lot of states for medical reasons. Kansas is not one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that gets us into kind of a big picture topic here, because you've been doing your research. The phrase Kansas is not one of them, i.e. one of the states that permits the use of cannabis or marijuana for this purpose or that. We're really an outlier, aren't we?
You can kind of think of Kansas as on this island, a shrinking island of states that have the strictest laws related to cannabis that aren't allowing any of this. There's just four states left.
No cannabis use for medical purposes at all.
No medical purposes.
Certainly no recreational use permitted.
Absolutely. No CBD, even when, and that's that oil that you mentioned, mm-hmm. even when it's been extracted without THC in it. Sorry for the acronyms. Now, THC is the ingredient in marijuana that gets people high. So you can get the CBD out without the THC. So you can get a product that won't make you high, and that people argue has medical uses, but Kansas doesn't allow that either.
This gets pretty complicated in the sense that, of course, it's not legal for use in Kansas for therapeutic purposes. But then you have the question about how big a deal is it, criminally speaking, and you have the Attorney General weighing in, and then you have the U.S. Food and Drug Administration weighing in, you have the ACLU weighing in. Can you sort all that out for us? I mean, what's going on with CBD oil?
Yeah, that's a good point. So when I say it's not allowed in Kansas, we had news recently that just this past month, the AG weighing in to say, kind of interpret Kansas's laws.
The AG meaning Attorney General Derek Schmidt.
The Attorney General Derek Schmidt, to say CBD, when it doesn't have this ingredient in it that makes you high, is this illegal in Kansas?
Right. Okay.
And his office concluded that it still falls under the definition of marijuana. In other words, it's illegal. So we have that situation. Now, the ACLU is a little concerned that we might need more clarity from lawmakers, because not all law enforcement agencies are going to apply that opinion, that sort of guidance from the AG's office, the same way.
In other words, you might have a sheriff's office someplace that, going by the letter of the law, would prosecute people or at least arrest people, and others that might look the other way. For
yeah,
families
exactly. Right. So now there's another interesting piece here, and that is that Kansas did pass a law that could potentially open the door to CBD in Kansas in a clearer manner, but that's depending on, kind of waiting on, the FDA to approve it.
So in other words, unclear. The Attorney General thinks that CBD oil, although it's minus the THC, the part of cannabis or marijuana that you derive the high from, it doesn't have that in it, but still it's said to be illegal under Kansas law. Not everybody's quite so sure about that, and it might not be illegal depending on something that the FDA may or may not do.
I think, yes, right. Okay. So, right.
Clear as it could possibly be, right? All right.
Yeah, if you could follow that. Yes, and okay. And then there are bills this year that might open that door.
Let's revisit further. The issue though of the residue.
So yeah, the way to think about this is just to back up a couple years. We have a problem in Kansas with prison crowding.
Okay,
and so what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out how to deal with that. And one way that that we came up with that the Kansas Sentencing Commission is tasked with looking at is reducing the penalties related to marijuana possession. So they adjusted those penalties. Right now in Kansas, under the new penalties, it's a misdemeanor offense the first two times you're caught with marijuana, and it's a felony the third time. Basically, the way they changed the law, it turns out that we still have a provision in law that says, say, if you got caught with some items that you had used to smoke marijuana, it has residue on it. Well, that would be that residue contains THC that we talked about. You get charged with THC possession. Well, that still has the higher penalties attached to it. So they're talking about just adjusting that down to the same level that we've got marijuana at now. The way they put it was it's not fair to charge the person who gets caught with the baggie of marijuana for them to face less penalties than the person who gets caught with an item that has residue on it.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that there are, by your count, three bills. Is that one of them?
Yeah, that's one of them. And then there are a couple of bills related to CBD and hemp.
When I think of hemp, I think of rope.
Marijuana and hemp, we're talking about the same plant. It's cannabis. But hemp is coming from a variety that has very little THC in it, okay. So little that you're not going to get high from it, and that's the difference.
So what's the issue with hemp this session?
The issue with hemp is basically in 2014, the federal government made some changes to say, hey, state departments of agriculture and universities can start basically running pilot programs to look at hemp. Right now, we have hemp in lots of products in the United States, and we're basically importing most of that from abroad, China and Canada mainly. So you can see there's a lot of interest in cashing in on that market within the United States. So a lot of states have jumped on that bandwagon to start exploring that. Kansas has not. Last year, we did pass a bill in one of the two chambers to look at hemp operations in Kansas, and there's another push this year. But you can't, where law enforcement get concerned, and the reason that they do not want hemp to be
growing all over the state,
yes,
like wheat
in Kansas, okay. Right, is because that makes their job very difficult when they find someone who they believe has a marijuana plant. Mm-hmm. Well, that person can argue that there's less than 0.3% THC in it. So then what are you going to do? Take that plant and test it for THC? I mean, this is, if we create the lab capacity to do that.
Well, Celia Lovis-Jepson, thanks a lot for talking cannabis with us here on State House Blend. We look forward to you coming back and updating us as the session goes on the progress of these bills.
Thanks very much. I look forward to it.
Marijuana is just one of the contentious issues that have been polarizing voters in the last few years. One candidate for Kansas governor says voters have had enough of that polarization, and as a consequence, both major political parties. So he's running for statewide office for a second time as an independent. 4 years ago, he lost a challenge to Republican U.S. Senator Pat Roberts. But who exactly is Greg Orman? Well, for starters, he's like a lot of people who eventually run for office. He grew up fascinated by politics.
I had participated in the Boys Nation program. Right. I came home so excited after meeting Ronald Reagan in the Rose Garden, and I said to my dad, you know, I might want to be a politician someday. And without missing a beat, he said, you know, why don't you skip the internship and go straight into crime?
While Orman's father was distrustful of government, his mother was an active Democrat in Minnesota and a leader in the nurses' union. But he says both of his parents influenced his politics.
You know, I think it makes me more able to really understand the positions from both sides of the aisle. And I think that's part of what's missing in politics today. You know, there seems to be such a trust gap between Republicans and Democrats. It reminds me, and I've said this before, of a married couple going through a bitter divorce. You know, they don't talk to each other anymore. When they do, they mistrust each other's intentions. They don't share the same things in common. And putting that group of people together and saying, solve our problems, is a little bit like taking that married couple and putting them in a room and saying, figure it out on your own. It's really not going to happen without the intervention of a third force, a force that's willing to listen to both sides, maybe do a little bit of mediation, in some cases maybe suggest solutions that neither side has thought of. But ultimately, I really do believe we need that third force in our politics.
To some extent, party labels can be helpful to voters because they do provide some signals as to where you stand on certain, you know, fundamental issues, whether it be abortion, taxes, lots of other things. As an independent, you're more of a blank slate in that regard.
You know, the reality is for me, being politically independent is not about ideology. I tell people there's room in the independent movement for principled conservatives and principled liberals. For me, being independent is really about three things. It's about putting my state and my country ahead of a political party. And I think so often what we've seen is the parties seem more interested in seeing the other party fail than they do in seeing our country succeed.
So which are you, a principled conservative or principled liberal?
You know, I consider myself fiscally responsible and socially more accepting.
And that's what used to pass for a liberal Republican. That's the Eisenhower definition of a liberal Republican.
It is. And in fact, there used to be ideological overlap, that there used to be that East Coast Republican who was a little bit more moderate, and there used to be the Southern Democrat who might be a little more conservative, and there was a way to get things done in Washington.
Right. There are actual studies. There's a professor out at UCLA. I mean, he's grafted out. They called it overlapping voting. And for most of the American history, particularly the 20th century, you could see that pretty clearly, conservative Democrats and liberal Republicans voting together on lots of issues. Then you can see, literally, there is no overlap anymore, none. What caused that?
Well, I mean, a big part of it is caused by our primary system. You know, we've got a primary system that has very low voter turnout. Typically speaking, it's only the most extreme voters who go and vote in the primaries. And what politicians have recognized is we've gone through this sorting where Republicans live next to Republicans and Democrats live next to Democrats, is what you have to fear is being attacked on your extreme flank. And so that leads to...
So you play to the base.
You play to the base, and we now have very polarized politicians, but we have an electorate that by and large is in the center.
So let's talk a little bit about, instead of these macro political, let's focus on the governor's race here. I mean, if you're elected, what would be your absolute top priorities as governor?
You know, number one, we need to grow the Kansas economy.
Yeah, everybody says that.
And we've got a demographic challenge. I mean, Kansas is aging, and if we're going to provide resources for an increasingly dependent population, we do have to grow.
Sam Brownback said the same thing, rural economic zones. He thought his tax policies would help do that.
And again, what I would say we've had in the past is a series of tactics, and what we really need is a proactive economic development strategy. As a private sector guy, if I'm trying to grow a business, one of the first questions I ask is, what are our strengths? What are the things that we can leverage?
And what do you think they are?
Well, you know, in the state of Kansas, we're at the geographic center of the United States at a time when our economy is quickly moving from a bricks and mortar to a distributed economy.
So logistics.
We need to be a logistics is a big part. Distribution capital of America. We also have three Class I railroads that travel through the state, numerous regional railroads. We have low-cost manufacturing inputs, low-cost energy. We should be the intermodal manufacturing capital of America. But the only way we're going to do that is if we have a proactive economic development policy and policies that underpin it that allow that to happen.
And does the fact that we've neglected our infrastructure for the last couple of years as we've experienced budget problems, is that a concern for you?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, again, it should be a concern for any one of those logistics companies who are thinking of relocating to Kansas. They have to have an effective and helpful partner in state government. They have to know that if they're going to locate a facility here, if they're going to make the investments in assets here that they believe are going to be long-lived assets, 30-year assets, that we're going to have an infrastructure policy that reinforces their decision to move here.
Okay, quickly turning to healthcare, you have said in the past that you would have voted against the Affordable Care Act had you been in Congress at the time. But you now support Medicaid expansion. Are those positions compatible?
No. You know, what I've said in the past is that I thought we were expanding a broken system mm-hmm. with the Affordable Care Act, and that what we need to do first and foremost is drive costs out of the system. You know, I think we're talking about the wrong problem here. We keep talking about who's going to pay for health care instead of asking the question, why is health care in this country so
expensive? The Affordable
Care
Act had some elements that tried to get at that, but they were pretty quickly defunded.
Correct.
Never really.
Yeah. They had some. The part of the Affordable Care Act was about trying various tests to see, could we lower the rate of care for chronic illnesses? Could we address issues for kids with asthma, et cetera? But there really was no follow-up on that. And so ultimately, my goal would be to drive costs out of the healthcare system first.
Two more quick questions. I'll let you go. But you do bristle a bit when people kind of confront you with the conventional political wisdom that your candidacy tilts this race to the Republicans, particularly if they nominate Secretary of State Kris Kobach, a firebrand conservative with a seemingly very solid base of support. What is it about that analysis, which appears to be based on data and voter trends, that rubs you the wrong way?
Well, you know, I sort of think conventional wisdom needs to be thrown out of the window in politics today. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at what happened in 2016, it's clear voters in the presidential contest went for unconventional choices.
Say the least.
Yeah. You look at the recent Gallup polling, 49% of Republicans and 52% of Democrats think we need a third party. I think what we're seeing in partisanship today is not necessarily loyalty to our own party so much as it is a hatred of the other party.
You may not have heard it, but Josh Swatty, who's one of the Democratic candidates for governor, invited you to participate in their upcoming forums as a way to give you, even as an independent, a forum in the primary cycle. Any interest in taking him up
on
that?
You know, we're going to travel throughout the state of Kansas. We're going to talk to voters. We're going to have the ability to get our message out and to talk to the people that we need to talk to win this race.
Greg Orman, thank you very much for your time. Great to talk to you. Look forward to talking to you more as the campaign unfolds.
Thanks, Jim. Happy to be here.
The viability of an independent candidate in the governor's race is one of those yet-to-be-seen things you hear so much about in politics. But we'll be following the race every step of the way and keeping you up to date on it and the goings-on in Topeka. For now, I'm Jim McLean saying so long and inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of State House Blend, Kansas.